The opinions and views expressed in Dead Men Do Tell Tales and all affiliated media are Jordan and Nicole's and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of their training program or others working in the field of medico-legal death investigation. Hey everyone!
Welcome to Dead Men Do Tell Tales,
a podcast about forensic pathology related topics.
I'm Nicole Kroom.
And I'm Jordan Taylor.
And we're both pathology residents who are going into forensic pathology.
And today we're going to talk to you about kind of switching back to another serious mode. We're going to talk about one of the public health outreaches that we do as forensic pathologists, which is called Child Death Review. And before we start, apologize for noises in the background. Cole is very awake and running around and playing. And two, we are drinking bourbon today.
Yes. And we have mentioned these child death review boards or teams in a couple episodes in the past. And we thought we would finally go into more detail about them this episode.
So, like, what is the point of a child death review? So the point is to prepare a comprehensive multidisciplinary review of child deaths to better understand how and why children die, and to use the findings to take action that can prevent other deaths and improve the health and safety of children.
And just a little bit of epidemiologic background, about 43,000 children, and children is defined as between the ages of 0 and 19, died in the U.S. in 2016, and that number has been fairly stable for the past couple of years. And overall, natural death is the most common manner at 35.9%. And in this category, the place where I got these statistics included SIDS within that category.
Okay.
And overall, infants die primarily of problems associated with prematurity, whereas adolescents die largely of trauma following violence or injury, most commonly motor vehicle injury. And out of the 43,000, about 2,000, it's not funny what I'm talking about, but just Cole like being very noisy in the background is hilarious.
I'm sorry for my child.
About 2,000 children die of child abuse and neglect each year, and about 40% of those are younger than a year old, and the majority are younger than 5 years old. And that data is kind of old. It's from 2001. I couldn't find anything newer, but I'm guessing since the overall statistics are the same, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah. And so when did child death reviews start? So the first place that I saw this was back in 1978. Los Angeles actually started a team to better identify child abuse fatalities. In the 1980s, these teams expanded through other states through grassroots efforts. And then in 1990, there was a Missouri child fatality study that identified that child abuse deaths are grossly underreported. And that led to a state law mandating review of all child deaths through age 14. So 1990 was the first time that this was legislated as something that should be done. Hmm. And then I'm skipping a lot of major points, but just because y'all don't want to know all the details. In 1992, Dr. Michael Durfee published on the origins and clinical relevance of child death review teams in JAMA. And this publication describes the need to expand national implementation of child death review in response to a critical need for the systemic evaluation and case management of suspicious child deaths. And then in 1993, the Federal Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act required states to include information on child death review in their program plan. So that was the first time when you had a federal law that started this.
Nice.
Then I'm going to skip quite a bit. So now I'm going to go to 2005, the National Maternal Child Health Center for Child Death Review. They started this child death review case reporting system, and that started in 11 states. So 2005 was the first child death review case reporting system across multiple states. And then in 2009, the CDC, Division of Reproductive Health, launched this three-year pilot to develop national SUID case registry. And SUID is the Sudden Unexpected Infant Death Case Registry, using child death review as the core reporting source. So now we're using child death review in a specific subset of child death review, which is the sudden unidentified infant deaths. And then it took until 2012 when Idaho became the 50th state to develop a child death review program. So this all started vaguely in LA in 1978, and in 1990 were the first local laws. 93 was the first national laws. And then finally, it spread to all 50 states to be part of this child death review reporting program in 2012. So it took quite a while, but, you know, it's been a solid 8 years now that we've had this reporting program. And all states have at least some kind of child death review program. So what's the current state of things? So 45 states have specific legislation concerning the structure and function of child death review. And these have two purposes, which we'll get into a little more depth later, but to identify and collect data pertaining to the cause and manner of child deaths, as well as providing prevention recommendations to state or local agencies based on this data. So these are all structured different depending on the geographic area and population. Many states have both statewide as well as local teams, and then various states use different methods. So some of them do it retrospectively, some of them use it investigatively, and then some kind of go parallel to ongoing certifications and investigations. So either going back, going forward, or kind of like consistently going through.
So all of the directions.
All of the directions. But it's interesting that there's still only 45 states that actually have legislation around this. But understandably, kind of like with coroner and medical examiner, they all have their different approaches to how they're going to do child death review.
Yeah, and it's not just the states. Also, the District of Columbia has their own, Guam, and the Navajo Nation. And then at the time of publication of the main article where I was getting my information, Puerto Rico was also in the process of building a team. And that's just in the United States and U.S. territories. Internationally, the first international child death review teams were located in British Columbia, so Canada, and New South Wales in Australia. And since then, teams have also been established in the U.K., New Zealand, and the Philippines. But currently only the United States and New Zealand have national data collection systems. And I think at the time of this article, Japan was also looking to institute some child death review teams. And I tried to do a little bit of research, but it doesn't seem like they've established them yet. And given the current pandemic climate, I am sure all of those goals have been pushed to the side for
yes,
now.
Other things at the moment.
Yes. So Georgia. You call me Michelle a bunch of times. I finally call you something wrong. Georgia.
Which, is it after, like, Karen in Georgia? Or is it after, like, the state? Because that's where my mom lives.
We're going to go with both. The answer is both.
At least George and Jordan kind of start with the same sound.
Yeah. Or I mistook you for my cat.
George?
George. So now George is also Jordan.
Oh, man. He's...
So Jordan mentioned earlier that these teams can be structured in different ways, and basically there are four different models that they can have. So one model is local review of individual cases and state review of the findings with state and local responses to findings, so both local and state teams. And basically the state team oversees the local teams, but does not review each case individually. And the local teams make local policy recommendations. And then the state generates these annual reports with recommendations for statewide policy changes. Second model is state and local review of individual cases, and then state and local responses to the findings.
So all of the things. This seems like the most comprehensive.
Yeah. It also seems a little bit redundant.
Yes.
Which, yeah, the state and local teams both review all of the individual cases. And then, unfortunately, that means that there's little coordination between the teams, and there's often no financial or administrative support from the state.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
because they're already doing the work. Why would they pay somebody to do the work as well?
Exactly. And then the third model is state-only review and responses to the findings. So no local teams, just a state team. And only selected cases or a certain percentage of cases are usually reviewed in this model. And how the cases are selected is kind of determined based on whatever the state. And then there might be subcommittees within the team that focus on certain types of deaths. So for example, deaths in foster homes might be a subcommittee. And then the fourth model is no state team, just a local team. And they review and make recommendations, and these can be individual cities or counties, and there's no specific state oversight in this case either.
Okay. And I didn't look into this. Is California the mix one? Because I know that in San Francisco, they review the cases locally.
Yeah, and they do in San Joaquin County as well.
Okay. So maybe it's local-local?
Maybe it's local-local. Because when I was looking around at different reports, Sacramento also had its own. Which if there was a state one, and that's where the state capital is. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I do not know.
So we've been talking about these state and local teams. So what actually makes up these teams? It's actually a pretty wide range of things. So first one I'll mention is obviously the medical examiner, coroner. There's a reason that we're talking about this because they play a pretty central role. We'll talk more in depth what the actual role is, but, you know, they come up with the autopsy report, the tox report, they're involved in scene investigation, in the medical history record search. So, you know, kind of one of the doctors on the team and the one telling you the final cause and manner of death. Other people that are involved include law enforcement. So they help with the case status as well as the death scene investigation. They also are involved with the criminal history of the family members of the suspects. Mm. So they can give you some of the background around that. Child Protective Services is often involved. And this is one for case status and investigation summary and kind of the summary of the factors surrounding the child. So the socioeconomic factors that influence the family dynamics, including like unemployment, divorce, previous deaths, a history of domestic violence, substance abuse, previous child abuse. So they can kind of give you the whole social picture around this family. Then, of course, there's a prosecutor or district attorney if any legal action is being brought on any of this, as well as a history of previous criminal prosecution of the family members. So this is where law enforcement and the prosecutor or DA can both help. Public health is heavily involved, and these are where you can get to some of the actionable things. So we're seeing a series of deaths involving gun violence, and you can work with public health officials to act on some of the findings that you found. Speaking of other doctors, pediatricians or another health family provider can be really helpful. This can help with both services provided to the family as well as direct health issues from that child when they were alive. So were there any developmental issues? Were there any past injuries? Any of the medical terminology that is brought up? That kind of thing. And then finally, I didn't think about this, but it makes a lot of sense. Emergency medical services. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of that first response. Maybe if the patient was alive while being brought to the hospital, they can tell you, you know, there isn't necessarily a death scene investigation, so they can tell you what they saw when they arrived at the child's home. You can look at their medical introduction to the case and some of the stuff around the introduction to the hospital. So there's a lot of people, and they all play a really important role. And the ones that the child death reviews that I've been at anyway, there was at least the medical examiner, a pediatrician, public health, and a prosecutor, district attorney. I think there wasn't any law enforcement at the one that I was at, or CPS, but
yeah. Yeah, I don't remember the makeup of the one that I went to, except for there was the medical examiner and a pediatrician. A couple other potential members that I found were education representatives. So like,
I guess I lumped those into public health, but yes.
Oh, I was thinking more like from school districts, like people high up in a school district might come, because some of the policies you want to implement might be at the school level.
I guess I consider that part of public health, but it is also important to note.
Yeah. And then also state teams can have appointees of the state or governor. So like politicians who can help to push policy through.
That makes sense.
Yeah. One other thing I found interesting is we're talking about child death review, which, as I mentioned in the statistics, it's death of anybody from 0 to 19 years of age, which is a wide range.
Yes.
But there are also these fetal and infant mortality review teams in some places, or FIMR teams, that are becoming more common. And sometimes they work with child death review teams, but sometimes they work on separate projects. Okay. So there's also like this subset of people that are looking at infant cases as well sometimes.
Very important.
Yeah.
So now that we kind of have an overall idea of what the general role of the child death review team is, some of the direct team members, I'm going to go through a list of the 10 objectives from the National Center for Fatality Review and Prevention. The first is very much so medical examiners, to ensure accurate identification and uniform, consistent reporting of the cause and manner of every child death. And you can use this to go back and look at some of the vital statistics and the overall data and overall trends. To improve communication and linkages among local and state agencies and enhance the coordination of efforts. So this is really making sure that everybody's involved and the outcomes are brought about. Improve agency responses in the investigation of child deaths. To improve agency response to protect siblings and other children in the homes of deceased children. Mm-hmm. So that's where CPS comes in, very helpful.
Yeah.
To improve clinical investigations and the prosecution of child homicides. So you can kind of see all these team members that are vitally important. To improve delivery of services to children, families, providers, and community members. To identify specific barriers and system issues involved in the deaths of children. To identify significant risk factors and trends in child death. To identify and advocate for needed changes in legislation, policy, and practices, and expanded effort in child health and safety to prevent child deaths.
Prevention.
Yay. Step one. And finally, to increase public awareness and advocacy for the issues that affect the health and safety of children. Hmm. So I guess I think of child death review as there was this horrible, horrible outcome, but how can we take this and make sure it never happens in the future?
Yes.
And I feel like this should happen with not necessarily every death, but at least in the broader scope of deaths.
Yes.
And it really only happens in children, elderly, and homeless people.
There's also some domestic violence review teams as well.
I feel like they're less nationally implemented, though.
Well, I feel like in doing this research, the child death review teams seem to be the only ones with lots of legislation behind them mandating the formation of teams.
Okay.
Whereas all the other types are kind of still piecemeal, like back in that 1970s.
Gotcha.
Kind of ad hoc.
Okay.
State.
So maybe this was like the first step and now we can get all the rest of them implemented.
Yeah. That would be nice.
Yeah, for sure. Because I know at least in San Francisco, they have very set review boards for those three categories. Like they're very set. They have identified, obviously the medical examiners, but they've identified clinicians that come in to review them. They've identified public health people that come in, and they really do work with everybody. But maybe that's because San Francisco tends to be on the forefront of this type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what it'll be like in Seattle. I wonder how many of these review teams they have there.
Go to all of them.
I know, I'm so excited.
We'll tell you guys about everything that we can talk about.
Yeah. So to specifically go further in depth into the role of the forensic pathologist, because that's why we're all here, about 5.9% of child death review programs are actually coordinated through a medical examiner office.
So I had a question on this because it said 5.9% of states coordinate their child death review programs. I mean, how is it 5.9% of states? There are 50 states. You can't get a 0.9. This was obviously from the same article, but right. It bothered me when I wrote this down. I'm like, how is it not six? Six would make sense. That would be three states.
Yeah. Maybe last state. I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, not important, but it bothered me. But yes, about 6% of states coordinate through the ME office.
Yes.
Way too low.
Well, most of the rest of them are done through the public health department, I think also makes sense. And then, you know, some medical examiner's offices are couched within the public health department.
That's true. So they're like, oh, that's a good point. So maybe they are... There, maybe it could be more if you consider it that way.
Right. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. So regardless of the states that have laws defining state or local CDR membership, child death review membership, over 30 specifically require the involvement of a medical examiner or forensic pathologist on the team, which is great because forensic pathologists often act as a gatekeeper. So we are able to identify cases that would be appropriate for state and local review, and some states even mandate that the medical examiner or coroner identifies which cases will be forwarded to state teams for examination.
Okay.
And then during the review of a case, teams might question the certification of cause and manner of death. So having a medical examiner available to explain to the team the logic of the certification or why certain cases are traditionally classified in a certain way helps to increase the understanding between local agencies and helps to clarify terminology and dispel misconceptions. So, for example, law enforcement and child protective services might not understand why a forensic pathologist classifies a suspicious case as undetermined rather than outright calling a homicide. And so having a medical examiner there to clarify that might help shine some light on the case. And then sudden unexplained infant deaths, which we did a whole episode about, are often a source of confusion for child death review teams, which is kind of reflected in the history of how these teams evolved. because early on in these teams, a lot of them were excluding SIDS cases because they wouldn't review natural deaths, and those would be considered natural deaths in a lot of states. Whereas, as we talked about in our episode, some of that has to do with the circumstances surrounding the death, which has a lot of targetable, modifiable factors. So like the Back to Sleep campaign.
Yes.
If we didn't start reviewing these cases, we wouldn't have realized that sleeping on your tummy was a risk factor for death in these cases.
Your tummy.
Your tummy.
By the way, put your children on their backs.
Yes, back to sleep. We're experts.
In children? No, we're not experts in children.
Yeah, that was a joke because we neither of us have children.
Nope.
No. Yeah, no.
We both have cats. Does that count?
No. I'm going to say no. Don't have to put my cat on his back to go to sleep.
Yeah, no, she would. Mine would protest heavily.
Mine likes to do the belly flop pancake position, really, so he might also protest.
That's true.
And then it's also possible that over the course of these reviews that a forensic pathologist might get more information that causes them to change the cause and manner upon further review. So that's also important in terms of vital statistics and actually like determining what is actually killing children in the community and appropriating resources.
Yes,
correctly.
I feel like a lot of it is just making sure you have a doctor on the team is really important, because you can't always get the child's pediatrician or something like that. So if nothing else, it at least gives you a doctor resource. So when you have a question around, obviously, how or why the child died is important, but also some of the cases that were there when they were alive. So the medical history, the family and social history, it's really the person that can help tie it all together.
Yes.
And then I think we kind of wanted to end it off with some of the, well, we're going to kind of each describe our own brief instance with the Child Death Review Board. But the big categories that I think of when I think of things that these can bring about change to are actually the American Academy of Pediatrics has a great list on this. Child abuse protection. It's a big category when children die with multiple injuries and then you have a history of multiple injuries. You can identify this. And then, of course, as we said earlier, you have other children that are living in the home. So to help protect other children in the home. Gun violence. This is a big group of things that you can identify some public health changes that can be made to reduce children's exposure to guns or improve safety around gun handling. Motor vehicle safety. This is the leading cause of death of children age 4 and older. So bringing about appropriate use of booster seats and seat belts and public health movements and laws around that.
Does that also include like when people leave their babies in cars and they...
I do not know, but probably.
Yeah, vehicular hyperthermia was one of the popular topics I came across for these boards.
I see that. As Nicole said, safe sleep, back to sleep. Don't put stuff in the crib with the baby besides a pacifier, et cetera, et cetera. Suicide prevention in general. This is a leading cause of death among 15 to 24-year-olds. And identifying some common factors among children, or identifying ways that have been able to help some children or things that didn't help. And the last one I saw was water safety.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is just really big. Summer months, making sure there's a lifeguard, what safety devices are appropriate, what safety devices are more harmful because, like, they're more buoyant on the back, so the child doesn't know how to swim, so their back ends up, and their butt ends up, and their face ends up in the water, and identifying, well, maybe there's a product out on the market that is actually more unsafe for children. So through a child death review board, you can identify an unsafe product and get it off the market.
Yep. Yeah, a really nice framework that I saw that was provided by this like National Center for Fatality Review and Prevention that has a lot of excellent resources for like how to set up these child death review teams, etc. You can target policy essentially at four different levels. So, or not policy, but you can make recommendations at four big levels. So education. So that's like the Back to Sleep campaign. It was educating parents about how to put their children to sleep to reduce the risk of sudden infant death. You can target agencies. So specific new programs that are targeted towards preventing child abuse. You can target laws. So you know, making neighbors have to put locks on their fences. Otherwise, they're liable if a child ends up in their pool.
Yeah.
And then you can target the environment. So this is what you said about, like, a consumer product that is unsafe. You can advocate for its removal from the market or advocate for its modification so that it's a bit safer. So there's a lot of different recommendations that these review teams can make based on the trends that they are seeing.
And then I figured we could end with just kind of giving a brief summary of what we saw in our individual. We've each gone to our own child death review
thing. The one I went to was at the beginning of college, so I barely remember it.
Okay, do you remember anything from it?
No.
Okay, no worries.
I mean, just that I thought it was really cool that a forensic pathologist was contributing to public health in that way.
Do you remember what the child died from?
No, I just remember that it was very small. Like, they reviewed 4 or 5 cases, but I forget exactly. Actually, I think one of them, I might have talked about this during our SIDS episode, but I went to a scene a SIDS case, and they talked about that case because the forensic pathologist I was working with had been to the scene recently, so he was just contributing his extra knowledge from having just gone to the scene about that case.
Gotcha.
But that is all I remember.
Okay.
Story done.
Mine, I'm going to do it very briefly, but essentially there was a set of twins and they were both put in this, and I wouldn't say the brand if I knew it, but it was one of those things where you put the kid in like a little chair rocker thing and you buckle them in and it kind of like bounces and makes them go to sleep.
Mm.
It was like some specific one that this child was put in. And essentially they came back and the child had like vomited a little bit and then aspirated their own vomit.
Oh no.
And they were both looking at how and why the child died. Did the parents put them in this thing properly? Was it too tight? So it was like so tight, you know, that it squeezed the child's stomach and made them vomit, or what was it? And the forensic pathologist went over all the autopsy findings around the aspiration.
Yeah.
And we went through how they had the parent show them exactly how they put the kid in this little rocker thing, for lack of a better word, like with a stuffed animal. And this is how they like strapped them in, et cetera, et cetera. And this was going towards more of a product review is the wrong word, but a evaluation of a product that was on the market to see if this in fact might have caused this child's death or not. And I think the conclusion they came to was, this kid probably just had a little bit of reflux.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate that they were in this. It was unfortunate that the parents left for a short period of time, short enough that the kid was able to vomit and aspirate.
Ah!
Yeah.
Having kids is scary.
So scary. I mean, life is scary. Having a cat is scary. Like, it's all... I feel like it's one of those things that everything is scary and...
How much risk are you willing to accept?
And that's exactly what it is. It's like, I play rugby. I could get injured. You know, is it like, what is the risk reward for that kind of thing? And I feel like, unfortunately, children are a very scary
high risk, high reward.
High risk, high reward. Maybe high reward. We'll see.
Yeah.
Depends on the
TBD.
But it's, there is no perfect answer. But it was interesting seeing them go through the whole process. Essentially, the forensic pathologist walked through the entire autopsy report, and then they walked through the entire scene investigation, and then the pediatrician walked through, you know, the history of that kid's reflux, which I think they did have a history of reflux, and they kind of just walked through everything around it, including the product. And like, I think we even watched a YouTube video of this product's advertisement online.
Oh wow.
And, you know, it was one of the, like, most highly recommended and blah, 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 blah. So, yeah.
So the one that I went to, it was, they had a regularly scheduled meeting, at which point they would discuss all of the cases. Was that the only case they had, or was this just a concurrent investigations emergency meeting?
So I don't think there are that many children that die in San Francisco, luckily.
Okay.
So I think it was the only case that month that they were reviewing.
Ah, I see.
So it was just one, and I think, which is always good. But there was only one that they were reviewing.
Okay. Okay. I didn't look into this. Do you know if the review teams, it's like a matter of public record what happens?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
It's a good question, though.
Yeah. Just wondering if you're a lay person and you're interested, are you able to attend one of Probably these meetings?
Probably not. Yeah. Because it goes into a lot of
HIPAA stuff.
HIPAA stuff.
Which is protected health information law. Yes.
Also, some of the, like, protections for the products. Like, if it wasn't the product's fault and somebody goes in and starts, you know,
yeah,
blaming it on something where it wasn't actually their fault.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense.
Yeah. Huh. So, speaking of spreading out your product and making more people know about it.
Wow. Social needs. That was a great segue. Props to you, man. If you liked this and any of our other episodes, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. It's how we get boosted up on the various podcasting platforms and other people hear about us.
Which I recently did look and we have, I think it's 24 ratings. So please go and add more than 24 would be awesome.
Yes. And we know that there are more than 24 of you listening because mm-hmm. Buzzsprout gives us our stats.
We've reached over 300.
Yay!
You can also visit our website at deadmendotellpodcast.com where we link to all of our sources in our episode guide.
On Twitter, we're at deadmendo.
On Insta, we're at the Dead Tale Tales.
And our Facebook page is Dead Men Do Tell Tales Podcast.
And as always, you can send us an email through the website or directly to thedeadtaletales@gmail.com. Please feel free. Any comments, questions, concerns. If you just want to say hi, we would welcome an email.
Yeah, we love it when people say hi. Mm-hmm. Especially after they leave a review.
Yay!
Oh my gosh, so much shameless plugging right now. and then our opening theme music is Introducing the Pre-Roll by Lee Rosevear, who you can find on SoundCloud.
So we hope you guys learned a thing or two today about child death review.
Yep. And the structure of these things is very similar to, as we mentioned, homeless death review, elder abuse death review, and domestic violence death review, which we talked a little bit about in our intimate partner violence. Don't know if we'll do super in-depth episodes about any of those things, yeah.
But there's a lot of great things out there.
Yeah.
So yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.